This is Kate Moorhead Carroll in the podcast, Find It. I have with me today Shelley Turner, who runs a financial service that's called Financial Sense Service, C-E-N-T-S,
right? Yes,
that's
yes.
Awesome. Shelley, welcome. I'm so glad you're with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Tell us how you got interested in the field of finance. Was it in childhood that you became aware of resources and how they worked, or was it more like later on when you were getting your degree? What happened to make you interested in money and where it goes?
Well, I think originally it started was I have an interest in business and I have a degree in economics. But what really happened was when I got out of college, I didn't really have a clue as to how to manage my money, and I promptly dug myself a very deep credit card hole trying to live off of credit cards because I moved to where I couldn't afford to live and I didn't really have a grasp on it. And so I ended up getting myself into debt more than I was making. And back in the day, in 1990, there was not a lot of resources for figuring that type of thing out. And if there was, I certainly couldn't afford them. I was in debt.
Sure.
And so I did what I call creative financing. And I figured out all kinds of ways to deal with it. And it took me about 8 years to get out of it.
Wow.
So a very quick, fun year.
So God taught you something in a painful way.
He did.
We often talk about that as the cross that we have in life. We go through something hard and then it ends up shaping us.
Yes.
And we use it to help people. So good for you for using that.
Thank you.
And once you climbed out of the debt, then how did you come to be in financial services to help people? Because a lot of people like to amass wealth, but it's something else to try to help others get out of debt.
So in 2006, when the real estate market kind of went sideways, I was attending a church and I met a couple, and he was a recruiter. And because people were really struggling for finding jobs as we move forward from 2006 and 2007, I'm sure you remember what happened, he was offering free recruiting sessions to help people find jobs, hone their resume and such. And he asked me if I would come in, because he knew my background for finance, and help them figure out how to deal with their budget while they were in a bad situation. So I started doing that with him, and then it just kind of came word of mouth, and I had other people at churches ask me for help, and individuals, other...
Really, there was the need that kept speaking to you. You felt that, we call that calling or vocation.
Yes.
From the Latin vocare. So you actually had people saying, help me, help me.
Yes, I had a minister from another church who would talk to the minister at this church that I was attending at the time, and he wanted me to help someone whose husband had just died, and she wasn't prepared. And then I kind of mentioned it to somebody, and they said, oh, my nephew needs help, or my so-and-so needs help, or I need help. And I think because I have walked the walk,
yeah,
it's easier for them to relate to me.
Yeah.
And also I try to keep it very casual and non-judgmental.
That's perfect. I'm so glad and I'm so grateful for you, because you're going to be helping us at the Center for Well-Being.
I'm super excited. I'm super excited.
Finances, yeah. So it's a strange phenomenon though, isn't it, Shelley, today that, I mean, you were right out of college, and I remember in college, I got those notices that said, hey, you've got $15,000 of credit.
Mm-hmm.
It made it sound like you had money in the bank.
It does.
What is it about our culture that we want to take advantage of people in that way, that we're willing to really put them in a kind of bondage? American culture has gotten a bit predatory that way, wouldn't you say?
I agree completely. It's a lot of societal pressure as to have enough, like there's never enough. So, you know, they present it as, oh, it doesn't cost very much, it's not that much per month. A lot of people don't look at the transaction costs that are associated with being in debt. I certainly didn't. I just needed a quick fix. And when you're desperate, you do things that you're like, okay, I haven't had time to think it. Right.
Thinking I'll face tomorrow, but
that's right.
Now I need this sofa or I need this car.
Right.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Right. And then you look at it and think, okay, I can afford this right now, and I'm going to make more money later. That's the trap.
Yeah.
And then so they end up getting in a position where they're not looking at the details. Mm-hmm. They're not looking at the fine print, because all they need to do is solve the problem at the time. And it's a vicious cycle. And of course, you have predatory people who have no conscience and they don't care. Mm-hmm. So it's,
think about evil back 100, 200 years ago. We had slavery and we kept people in literal bondage.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, well, we're enlightened society. We don't have slaves anymore. But what we're really doing to people is enslaving them. I mean, when you are deeply in debt, it's very difficult to ever come out of it or gain resources or own your own home or become your own free person. You are really in a kind of bondage, isn't it?
It is. It's true. And what happens is too, it's you feel defeated. So it's very difficult to make steps forward. So you feel like, well, you know, it can't get any better, so I don't care. And then it ends up becoming worse because you've made the situation worse.
Yeah.
And so it's a mindset. You have to take it a mindset. And people want to take big leaps forward when really the proverbial one bite of the elephant at a time is really how you need to approach things, both positive and negative. Mm-hmm. Positive, small incremental changes add up to allowing you to save for things. Mm-hmm. And small incremental changes allow you to chip away at debt that you've accrued. But we're a quick fix society.
We don't like anything that takes time, do we?
No, and everything takes way longer than you think it is once you're in a situation where you owe money. And then I always say that, you know, all you have to do is say, I'm going to have extra money this month, and something will come up and be like, okay, well,
yeah,
I don't have any extra money.
Exactly. Yes, yes. Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, you know, it's really interesting. Jesus in the Gospels, he talks about money and resources more than he talks about prayer, which is really interesting to me. I think that how people choose to spend their money or whether they get in debt or not is a deeply spiritual issue, and it really does shape your life.
It does.
And what you do with whatever you have is a statement. Your budget is a faith statement, really. It's a value statement.
It is.
What matters to me? Well, you can say a lot, but what do you actually giving to? That'll tell you what really matters to you, right?
It is true. And that is one thing that happens as well, is when I counsel people, when I teach classes, I said, you work hard for your money, make your money work hard for you. Remove the things that are not important to you and spend the money on that what is. That looks different for every single person. And we also have a very judgmental society as to what you spend your money on.
Yeah.
So I'm like, don't worry about that. So I'll give you an example. I have a membership at a pottery studio.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm looking purely for bang for my buck, I don't get my money out of it as far as hours that I'm there. But what I get out of that goes so far beyond the cost.
Yes.
And I think a lot of times people don't focus on that because they are mired with good reason in the weeds, proverbial weeds.
Yeah.
Of dealing with things, but sometimes you do need to take a step back and think, what can I put in place that helps me become a better person, a better mindset, relaxes me, allows me to see things clearly so that I'm not in a source of stress all the time?
Yes.
Because that definitely colors things. Money problems are very stressful.
They are, aren't they? They're one of the worst sources of stress that we have today. So that's so interesting. On the one extreme, you have all this spending that gets you in debt. But on the other extreme, you have a kind of person that won't be fully alive because they're so strapped down to help me hold on to my dollar that they won't do things that enhance their life. Money is designed to serve us. It's not to something that we should be looking to as if it's the master.
Right.
That and we would call idolatry when we make money the master.
Yes.
Instead of God.
Yes, and it's a slippery slope because you don't want to negate that it is a problem and that it is a huge source of stress in people's lives, but you do want to encourage them to look at something that is going to bring joy into their life.
Yeah.
So that they can be balanced, and your center for well-being is all about balance.
Yes, yes.
And it is hard, and so sometimes we start with something small, like what do you enjoy? Do you enjoy reading? Buy yourself a book. Go to those bookstore and buy something.
It doesn't have to be a big deal.
No. Right. And that's the other thing too, is there's a lot of societal pressure for big purchases.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not important to everybody.
Yeah. What are some of the, could you give us an example of some of the cases that you've seen? I mean, confidentially, not by name. What are some of the things that you see happening? Like, say, for example, if we start with someone who's pretty young, what are some of the things that happen to young people financially that gets them in trouble?
So the one thing that I see a lot of now is delivery charges. They think, oh, I don't want to stop playing my video game to go out and get what I need, so it's easier for me to have delivery charges. And those add up. That's one thing. Also, it's not taught in schools. It's not taught at home sometimes, where a parent, if they're embarrassed, they're definitely not going to talk. So sometimes they don't have basic foundations of how banking works, especially of how loans work. Like we talked about back in our day, it was credit card forms, but now it's student loans. It's very easy for them to get them.
Predatory student loan pretty easily, can't you?
Yes. Yeah. So those of just not understanding basic finance.
There are different kinds of loans.
Yes.
We don't know. Many people don't realize that.
No. Some are interest only at first. Some are not. There's all kinds of loans. They, you know, they just don't know. So that's a big thing, I think, is sort of, and the also becoming a more cashless society. When you spend cash, it's painful. You have it in your hand.
In your hand, you have to give it away.
Yes. Yeah, swiping.
You can't see the dollar go away.
No.
Yeah.
And what happens, it's very easy. Mm-hmm. It's super, I'll just put it on my card. I'll deal with it later.
Right.
So that happens with a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. And I did have one case. I taught a girl how to balance her checkbook before she went to college. And I said, your expenses are now going to be tied to your student ID. We need to close this checking account. You're not going to need it. She goes, well, it'll only cost $5 a month. I'm like, that's $60 a year. It's these small increments are viewed as it's not that much.
Right, but add it up.
Oh, gosh. Yes. I told my sons, it's not the big stuff. It's the nickel and dimes that get you. I mean, the small stuff adds up.
Yeah.
So
and the interest rate, of course, you need to look at that.
Yes, and it and oftentimes there is an intro rate, and then it changes. People don't pick that up. Mm-hmm. Fine print.
Right.
Fine print for everything.
Fine print. So if someone is graduating high school, what's your advice for them?
To learn basic finance of how banking works, of how credit works, mm-hmm. of what you can truly afford. Most of them don't understand taxes when they start a job.
Yeah.
They have no idea. It's very hard when you don't have an income to understand how far the money goes.
Yeah.
So I do this little thing with them where I'm like, okay, you got this much money. You know, where's it going to go? How are you going to spend it? Well, now you don't have enough. What are you going to adjust?
Mm-hmm.
It's a balancing act all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that goes forevermore.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
That's our lives.
It changes. So really getting a handle on basic finance and understanding how money works.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be complicated.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have elaborate investments. I don't even talk about investments.
Well, one of the things we talk about here at the Cathedral is building generosity into your budget as well.
Like mm-hmm.
the tithe is an ancient concept of 10%, mm-hmm. which is something that I've practiced all my life, but it shapes your whole life.
Yes.
But even just beginning with a little bit of saying, I want to give to the betterment of the world, and it doesn't have to be to church, it could be to Greenpeace or
mm-hmm.
whatever, you know, Red Cross, but getting the practice of giving is also so generative. Talk about making you feel more fulfilled.
It does. Yeah. It does. And I think, too, people feel like they have to do very specific things to give back. And again, it's incremental. It could be anything.
Could be a little bit.
Anything. It's rounding up at the cash register for a charity that's important to you, or Salvation Army or dropping a dollar in. It's going to volunteer your time, because time is money.
Yes. Oh, yes. But people who give tend to be more joyful. I mean, I see that all the time.
Absolutely.
And they tend to also understand their finances better. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting.
The more knowledgeable about money in general. That's not always the case.
Not always. And you're right. It is a general statement, but it's true. The majority of the time versus less time, because those who are focused outward versus inward, because building wealth is an inward requirement. You have to think about it like that.
Right.
But when you're doing it in a way of like, okay, how can I get the biggest bang for my buck?
Mm-hmm.
What makes me feel good? Not going to get a Starbucks feel good, but how will I feel good about spending my money?
Mm-hmm.
It changes the parameters as to what you're willing to do with it.
Right. Saying to yourself, I have $100 and I want to give it away.
Mm-hmm.
Where do I want to give it? What a joyful thing to be thinking about. What matters to me? You know, what do I want to do? Do I care about the St. John's River more than I care about, you know, the foster child more than I,
yes.
the homeless, what do I want? And it helps you understand where your heart lies. Yeah,
it does. And with that, you have to be very intentional now and do the research to make sure that they are legitimate.
Where it's going, yeah.
Because again, with the predatory, there is predatory charity as well.
Yeah. At the Cathedral now, we also, people will give to my discretionary fund and I will give it away so that they don't have to get on the, they don't have to be on a mailing list. Because
right.
when you give to a charity, you get a lot of
yes.
solicitations. So, yes. Well, so as someone gets into middle age, what do you think are some of the issues you see there when someone's 40, 50? What tends to happen then? Are people start to think about retirement? Or first you got your, if you're going to have kids, that's a big deal nowadays. To
yes.
Start saving for, if you want to contribute to their college or anything, that's a big deal, right?
Yes, it is a big deal. And when I counsel people and teach classes, I also say, make sure you read the fine print. Fine print, because there's all kinds of ways to save for college now. For example, there used to be a fund that you could save, but it was only used for educational purposes. Well, not every child decides that they're going to go to college, which is fine. But if you've been saving for 15 years for college, mm-hmm. and now your money is locked up in a fund and you can't use it, it's a big deal. So I find that college is one thing, or helping prepare for cars or whatever they're going to need as they get older. The biggest thing I run into with middle age is they thought Social Security was a definite thing and they didn't need to prepare. Yeah. And also they did not expect costs to go up, because costs rise very quickly compared to what you're thinking about, because you're just in the moment. Yeah. So retirement is a big deal, and I deal with a lot of like, oh, what am I going to do now? So they've chased the dream of having these big houses, and now they're in a choice where they have to make sacrifices and they have to downsize, which doesn't usually end up being a bad thing. But if you're not ready for that mentally, it can feel very disheartening. Mm-hmm. So I've worked hard and now I'm giving up. Mm-hmm. So I try to get people to look at it as, what are you adding? Mm-hmm. When you take something away, it's adding something. Good. It doesn't have to be a negative.
Yes, yes. Having less stuff is not always a punishment. It can be liberating.
It's very liberating. And there's a lot of minimalism mm-hmm. blogs out there, yes, and things. And it's also the cost of maintaining. There is a cost for maintaining everything you own.
Yes. So the less you own, the less you're paying for maintenance.
Right. And it's more freeing, as you said, because it allows you to have time to pursue. You are not chasing the maintenance cost all the time. Less money you have to make.
Right.
It is full circle all the time. But people looking at money when it's stressful, it's usually negative. And I'm like, okay, let's turn it around and let's make sure that we look at it as a positive mindset to make it work for you. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't feel like they have control of their money, but they do.
Yeah, they don't. But that's true. We don't have to give away control. Just because there's a predatory culture out there doesn't mean we have to let that happen. I love how Jesus said, be wise as serpents and innocent as doves.
Yes.
We're supposed to be smart. He didn't want us to be dunderheads.
No.
Not the same as being loving or peaceful. They're not stupid. You
no.
can be very smart. Yeah, it's okay to know what you're doing.
And I feel like with that being said, a lot of people are overwhelmed.
Yes.
So
it's hard to look at the truth, especially when the truth is a bit ugly. You know, it's like going mm-hmm. into a messy room that you know you need to clean. You just want to shut the door and pretend it's not there, but it's there. You got to open the door and look at it.
That's what I deal with mostly, yeah. is when people come to me, they're like, I don't want to know. And I said, you want to know. And in my workshops, I'm like, the best thing for you to do to reduce your stress is to know what's happening.
Yes.
If you know what's happening, you can make adjustments. You know, money is also very fluid.
It is. It flows.
Yes.
And it's so amazing how the darkness makes us want to hide from it and not mm-hmm. look at it. And then a lot of the crimes that we see are people who didn't let themselves know what they were doing, or
right.
people, organizations that didn't have transparent finances. So
right.
looking at money and letting it be mm-hmm. out in the open is so much healthier than hiding it. But boy, we don't want to let anybody know what we're making for a living. I mean, it's just terrible.
It is. And it affects you. It affects you because you're afraid that when you say it, they're going to judge you.
Yeah.
And money is very judgmental. Mm-hmm. The subject to money is judgmental. And when people come to me, I'm like, look, I've seen it all.
Yeah.
I've seen it all. There's no judgment here. I walked it. I dug myself a big old hole, and it was embarrassing.
You use your cross to help others.
Yes.
They know you can relate to them. That's beautiful.
It does help. It helps a tremendous amount, because if I had never experienced that, I would not be able to understand it at that level. But keeping their eyes closed is a big problem at all ages.
I'm sure.
It does. And
then a lot of people pretend they're not going to die, too. So
yes.
then they don't plan for that.
Yes.
Make a will or anything like that. Let's talk
yes.
about getting into the older years, because I just heard the difference between a warm handoff and a cold handoff, which I liked a lot. Like giving while you're alive as opposed to waiting until you're dead.
Okay. I like it. I like it. I hadn't heard that.
So what do you say to someone who's getting into the retirement bracket? What should they be looking at financially?
Choose your legacy. Mm. What do you want to be remembered for?
Well, that's a great question.
I mean, you know, do you want to be remembered for somebody who had a ton of money and never really did anything but spend it on yourself? Or do you want to help your children? Do you want to help a church? Do you want to help animals? I mean, what do you want to be remembered for? Someone's writing your eulogy. Mm. What do you want it to say?
A beautiful question, yeah.
So, and it's a hard question at that age, because they feel like they have to make a decision, like this big impact. And I'm like, it doesn't have to be a big impact. Any impact is still impact.
Yes. But write your love letter. I think of a will as a love letter to the world.
Like, yes.
When I pass, I want people to know that I love this and I love that and I want to help with this or that. And that mainly that I thought about it, that I cared enough about people to make a plan so they didn't have to figure it out after I was gone.
Yes. And I think, too, because we make such a big deal in society of billions of dollars here or millions there, this person left this and that person's so successful and all that. I think if you spend a lot of time online or watching TV or anything, you feel like, I can't make a difference. And you can make a difference. And so let's make a difference while you're alive so you can feel it.
Yeah.
And then tell people after you passed. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to be, doesn't have to be this huge deal. Mm-hmm. It has to be an event.
Yes.
It's little, it's a walk along the path. Mm-hmm. It's a path that, choose the path you want. What's important to you? What's not? Get rid of the stuff that's not. It's really very simple.
Do you find that people who have perhaps somewhat have less or at least are very aware of what they have, that they're more grateful?
I do, actually. It seems like what happens as the more money people amass, they become farther, farther away from where they started. Mm. Especially extremely rich people. I have dealt with some and they're a little out of touch. And so they think, well, I'm throwing all this money around here, but is it what you want or is it about what you, because you think you should do it? Mm. So there's also a should.
Yeah, there is.
I call it.
It must be hard with people who have a really big net worth that the public becomes aware of. They
yes.
get hammered. I mean,
yes.
it's very hard. That's a whole job in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
How to be a philanthropist is probably mm-hmm. exhausting, I imagine.
I don't deal with them too often. I cross their paths when they hear, in
more
a conversation.
People that have struggled with not enough and debt and things like that.
I call it the supposed to book. The supposed to book exists. I mean, people also get hung up on what I was supposed to do and I didn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what? Rip the page out and move on.
Yeah. Well, I call that the what ifs. You
yes.
get trapped in the what if. Why didn't I do it this way or that way? Well, life is, you're living the present. You don't live in the past. So it doesn't help us to go back to the what ifs.
No, it doesn't. And also it colors how you move forward.
Mm, exactly.
Because if you're tied up and I should have done this, you can't make a decision what's working for you now.
Tell me a little bit about investing. I know many people don't have a ton to invest, but there are beautiful ways of investing nowadays, not only socially responsible investing, but also, buying something from someone. Like, I love to go to the Riverside Arts Market.
Mm, small business.
Yeah, because I see an artist there, and say a woman makes a pair of earrings that I find beautiful. I can look at her and I can say, you are so gifted at what you do, and
mm-hmm.
I'm going to buy your earrings,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to wear them, and I thank you. And I just love that, because I don't get a chance very often to see the person who made
right.
what I'm buying. So I love those little markets.
Small business is a fantastic way of investing in the area that you live in.
Mm.
I mean, it doesn't have to be these big things. So, of course, if you want wealth to build a little faster, you're going to put it in the market.
Yeah.
I always say, go talk to a financial advisor. That's not my wheelhouse.
It's a great gift
but
for people, huh?
You live in your society. You live in your general area. I seek out small businesses like you do. It's a great way to invest. I mean, you attend a church. Find a program that's important to you. So the term investing is not all about money, but it tends to look at it like that.
Mm-hmm.
But invest your money in what's important to you in any way that works.
Right.
That's right. So it's combined. So you take the word invest and they think, oh, I have to be in the market. No, you don't. It's all a matter of perspective.
Yeah, in addition to the Center for Well-Being, and we're sitting here in this beautiful counseling room up here on the third floor of the Cathedral House, we have all these classes for free, including what Shelley's going to be teaching on financial wellness. We have yoga. We have support groups of all kinds, lots of wonderful classes. But we also have a bookstore. I need to bring you over there. It's a gift shop as well.
Okay.
And we carry wares from all over the world, from people that are lifting themselves out of poverty by making crafts and art and jewelry, and they're beautiful. But what I love about it is we send it right back to them, and they make their profit and they make their own living. But it kind of bypasses the corporate world. So I call it a little alternative economy we have going on here.
It is. And what a great way to invest in global economy.
Yes.
I mean, really, talk about far reaching.
I know. I just bought a beautiful thing to hang outside my house. It's a tree made out of hammered metal from Haiti. Okay. They just took oil drums and they made this beautiful tree made out of these oil drums. And it's gorgeous. And I get to buy it and keep it and send the money back to them. And what a wonderful thing that they make that money themselves. So it's a generative thing. It'll keep on going.
And you made a difference.
And I made a difference and I got a pretty thing out of it.
Not only have you made a difference to them, you made a difference to your own well-being because you get to see something beautiful that brings you joy.
Right.
And so just looking at it alone, you enjoy it. But also then you get to think, and not in a way of like, I did that for somebody, but I contributed to something that was important to me by buying a little piece of something that brings me joy.
And you could go to Target or Walmart and contribute to the huge mega corporations, or you could buy, they have a lot of socks too. Everybody needs socks.
Yes. They do. And what happens too is I do have this conversation is those things, the small businesses tend to be more expensive.
Yes, they do.
And you do have to make choices.
Yes, you do.
But
sometimes you just need to buy the cheap thing. But sometimes you can afford that little beautiful thing.
Yeah. And that is, I mean, money is about choices. Mm-hmm. You need money to survive, but you get to choose. You get to choose.
Yeah.
You, like you mentioned, it is a form of bondage of worrying about how it's going to happen and all of that. And you do have to do that. But if you pay attention and you are cognizant of what your situation is, it makes the choices a lot easier to deal with.
You know, there's one other piece that I would love to mention with you because I see it sometimes is funerals, believe it or not.
Oh, yes.
Have you seen that? Yeah. I find that there are folks, especially sort of immigrants or people that aren't maybe native speakers of English, they'll go and then they'll put a coffin on a credit card for
yes.
their grandmother. And the grandmother, I say, is just her remains, you know, and they could do it so much more cheaply, but the funeral home will often make them feel like they've got to do this elaborate ceremony because they love their loved one. And then I see people going into debt over that, which I think would make their loved one sad, the one that passed away.
I think that falls under the societal pressure of making a grand gesture.
Yeah.
That the bigger, the better.
Right.
And it's hard to escape.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yes, it's very...
We can do a cremation and a burial just right here without even having a funeral home. So, and that's just a few $100s as opposed to thousands. And people have to be careful these days.
They do. And
money
also
is for living, not for the dead.
It is. I love it. And I do say that you can't take it with you.
Right.
You know, and it's a fine line too of how do I operate where I don't run out?
Yes.
But I also don't have all this left where I can't choose where it goes.
It's hard, isn't it? Yeah.
Especially when people are not prepared, when they do not have a will. It could be a very simple will. When they die, it does become a process in the state where they're
so much
right.
If you don't have a will, you're going to give a lot to the government.
Yes, and you don't get a choice as to what happens to it.
Exactly.
So
the other thing, when you're dying, I see you. So a lot of people in their 80s and 90s, they'll have an event at home. And they'll basically die. But then they're taken into the ICU. And medically now, we can pump a body up and keep it going, costing $50,000 a day, while the family all gathers and makes a decision to let them go. Meanwhile, the whole thing costs $200,000, $300,000, and they could have just died. A DNR, or a durable power of attorney, who they had said to, look, I'm 85, I'm 95. If I go, just let me go, okay?
Yes.
Don't spend a lot of money keeping my body going, because I'm good. I've had a long life. That can save you hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yes. And sometimes, depending on how things are written up, the family becomes responsible for that kind of
debt. Right.
Death.
And sometimes this person is comatose on a breathing machine and left there, and not allowed to die. And then you're talk about a black hole for all your money.
Yes. Yes. So it really is complicated and simple at the same time.
Yes.
Complicated, yes, but you can make it simpler if you just...
Make the choices.
Yes, and understand what you're doing.
And make the plans.
Yes.
Amen. Well, God bless you in your work. That is really holy work. Money is a deeply spiritual issue that we don't like to talk about. So power to you, Shelley. I'm so grateful for you. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining me in this podcast. May God bless you and keep you always.